I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi.
I'm really, it's amazing that Dara called me to speak. I haven't spoken in a while, and when she asked me for this day, I thought it was definitely a God thing because it is my anniversary. I surrendered 23 years ago today. And when I woke up that morning, I didn't know that I was going to be surrendering that day. It was just, okay, I'm getting up, I'm not going to eat sugar today, just like every other day for the last, 15 years. So it was just another day. So something, God must have gotten in there and just shifted something. I started coming to the rooms a month prior, and I think it was March 30th was my first meeting. I went to an open speaker meeting in Ridgewood, and I really identified, and for the first time in my life, I felt hope, because I never felt hope. I've tried so many different diets and weight losses and all, just so many things, and nothing ever worked. I would always end up, it seemed like the longer I abstained from sugar, the worse my binge was on the other end of it. And it was, it was awful. But I went in that day, and I for the first time, I felt a little bit of hope. And some lady in a gray fuzzy sweater hugged me and said, keep coming back. And it really touched me, and then I kept coming back. And for about a month, I played around. I went to meetings. I would go to a meeting, and I'd be able to, I guess, be abstinent or just not eat sugar for a couple of days. But then I would binge again. And I know that on April 28th, we went out to celebrate my brother-in-law's birthday. And I know I'm not supposed to diagnose other people, but I think there were some other compulsive overeaters at my table, and I think I ate them under the table. And I woke up the next morning, full. I just couldn't stop. I woke up the next morning again full of remorse, self-pity, all that stuff. But I got myself up and I went to a meeting and I heard some lady share about having a perfectly imperfect abstinence, and I said, she's the sponsor for me. So I asked her to sponsor me, and she said she wasn't really great with newcomers, and I said, but I was afraid to do anything else. And I just tried to eat three, as Tony Ann was saying, three moderate meals a day with nothing in between, and I was doing that. And then I guess I started that day not realizing that that was going to be the first day of this abstinence, and I'm so grateful for that. And the days turned into weeks, and then the weeks turned into months, and within a couple of months I was dying inside, and I was attending HOW meetings, and I asked a HOW sponsor to sponsor me. And she gave me a food plan. She gave me two food plans. She said, here, pick one. And I did. And it's very similar to what I'm still following today. There have been some changes, but not my changes, through a dietitian, but not through me, because my best thinking is what got me here, so I'm not in that position to do that by myself. So, and HOW saved my life, because by going to HOW, but the tools were drummed into my head. Don't pick up no matter what. One day at a time. Food is not an option. These are the tools. These are the steps. This is, and I did writings. I was looking at those. They're different from that, but it's like I did a series of writings through the steps, and I learned how to not eat compulsively one day at a time, and I'm so grateful that the obsession to eat was removed from me. But what I didn't understand in the beginning is that I had this disease. It's body, mind, and spirit, and I didn't understand it at the time. I didn't understand that when I put sugar or flour into my system, I got a physical craving that compelled me to eat more. I didn't really understand that. Nobody really taught me that. I didn't understand that there was an obsession to eat, that this time it would be different. I experienced it my whole entire life. I would eat something and then I would have to eat more, and I didn't understand why, but it's that physical craving. But then if something wasn't going right, if I was on a diet for a period of time, it's like, oh, I've been so good, I can treat myself to, something that had sugar in it. And then the next thing I know, I did it, I had only one. But then within either a day or a week or a couple of days, whatever, I would be binging again. I didn't understand why. I didn't understand that mental obsession, it's going to be different this time. But it was never different. I learned coming in here that that's the definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. When I came, after about 7 years, some people around here were working with writing buddies. So I wanted a writing buddy. And I was coming to meetings. I was abstinent, but I was miserable, very untreated. I wanted to die on a regular basis. I was eating. I was following my food plan. But there was no joy, there was nothing, and I was just dead inside. It was just, I was miserable. You know, as the big book says, restless, irritable, and discontent. Talks about like those, on page 52, the bedevilments. I was having trouble with all my personal relationships. Couldn't make, I had a job, but I couldn't, didn't feel like I was making a living. I was prey to misery and depression. I was just a mess, just an absolute mess, and that was my life. It was totally unmanageable, and that was without the food. So I asked someone to be a writing buddy, and we started doing this, the OA workbook. We got to about the fourth step, and I still wanted to die. Like, I still was miserable, and that kind of fell apart, and I asked somebody else to be a writing buddy, and she said, no, but I'll take you through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm like, well, no, I really want a writing buddy. And she's like, well, no, if you really want to do this, I'll take you through the steps in the big book. I'm like, all right, fine, we'll go through the steps in the big book. And I started sitting with her, and I started to have an experience. And for the first time, I congratulated myself for not picking up the food for 7+ years. It was like, it was fantastic. I was doing a great job. I didn't open up the refrigerator. But then I realized, years, I don't even know, like I just realized way after the fact that, but I didn't want to open up the refrigerator. It wasn't me just saying, you know, being really strong. It was like I didn't have the desire to open up the refrigerator. So that definitely came from some kind of power greater than me, because I was never able to muster that up on my own for my whole entire life. So God was working in my life from that day that I surrendered, and I didn't even know it. You know, from that first day, my original sponsor said, you know, when you wake up in the morning, say thank you for waking me up abstinent, and please keep me abstinent today. And before you go to bed at night, thank you for keeping me abstinent today, and please keep me abstinent again tomorrow. And I did it because she told me to. But I still do it today. It's the last thing I say before I go to bed, and it's the first thing I say when I wake up in the morning. You know, thank you for waking me up today and for waking me up abstinent. Please keep me abstinent today. And it's just been amazing. So that started me on my journey through the 12 steps in the big book. And by doing the 12 steps in the big book, you know, going through the first step, I mean, the doctor's opinion and the first 43 pages is all on step one. There's so much in there. Because, you know, it's the physical and then the emotional, and then there's the spiritual. So I really had to learn, like, I was finally taught that I don't metabolize sugar and flour products the way normal eaters do. I've been in my car with my kids when they were little, and they, Mom, it's dripping, I can't, I was like, what do you mean? Like, just eat it. Like, you know, and I'd have to always have a garbage can because I couldn't clean it up the way other normal eaters can clean it up. So I'd have to have a garbage, and I'd always have to make sure I got a cup so they could put it in the cup and we could throw it out when we got home. I didn't understand it. But I'm full, I can't eat any, like, and I would say to them, and I still say to them, you're not my child, I don't understand. I don't know where you came from. So, you know, I learned that so I can't have any of it. And if I have a bite, even if it doesn't, and like, there have been times I've gotten something by mistake and I've taken a bite, it's like, oh crap, it has sugar in it. And then my first prayer is like, oh God, please don't let me have a physical craving for this. And I would throw it out. And thank God I didn't get a physical craving. And thank God I've done these steps and I'm recovered, because my mind can take that and say, oh, you had a bite of that and it didn't bother you. So that means maybe you can have a bite of this. And just so grateful that the obsession didn't return, and that you know, I didn't get the physical craving, and that I was able to move on. And I'm just so grateful for that. And that's by working all of the steps. So step one was really important, because I learned that food wasn't my problem, I was my problem. I wasn't okay inside. Like step one says, we were powerless over food, and then there's a dash, and that our lives had become unmanageable. And I used to think that my life was unmanageable because of the food, but my life was unmanageable because I have this soul sickness, this big, I would call it a big black hole inside, and nothing can fill it. And it got to a point where food didn't work and couldn't fill it either. And it was, as I've heard people saying here, it's a God-shaped hole. Mm-hmm. So I realized that I'm spiritually sick and that I need something to be. So if I put the food down, I don't have the physical craving. So if I don't eat it, I don't crave it. If I am spiritually well, then I don't get that mental obsession. So I need to, that needs to be fixed. And that's fixed by doing the 12 steps. And I've tried the 12 steps in other, I've done them like several ways, but the only way that ever brought me freedom was by doing it through the big book, the way it was originally designed. So I learned that I was powerless over food and that my unmanageability comes from me. And my unmanageability is what caused me to eat in the first place. It wasn't my eating that caused my unmanageability. It was my unmanageability that I couldn't face life on life's terms that made me pick up the sugar and so that I can, or whatever, so that I can get comfort. And I'm just so grateful that I had that experience going through the steps and coming, you know, and remember step two, just being, you know, having to, there, I had to believe, I looked in my sponsor's eyes and there was a clarity there. She said, if I could do it, you could do it. So I went with that and realized today that it took me a really long time from the time I was a little girl to develop that relationship with food. That took me till I came in here when I was like something like 32. That it's going to take me some time to develop a relationship with a power greater than myself. And that relationship is still growing and it's still evolving. And it's way beyond what I could have ever possibly imagined. And nothing like when I started today. You know, it was when I started 23 years ago. You know, and I still sometimes feel like it's only a mustard seed of faith that I have. But then I act as if and amazing things happen. You know, and it talks about, you know, step three, turning my life and my will over to the care of a higher power. And I used to say, what does turn it over mean? And they say, you know, turn it over. Like, well, how do you turn it over? Well, you know, you turn it over. And I was like, well, how? Well, you can get a God box. You could write it down and put it, like, I just didn't get it. But then step three, I was able to make a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of steps 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. And by doing that, that's where the relation, that's how I turned it over. So I couldn't just turn it over to whatever this power was. But I was able to make a commitment to do the rest of the steps, and that's what my third step was. And by doing that, and by writing my inventory, and see, and again, fourth column, I get to see my part in everything. I get to see that it's not them, it's me, and I get to see my part in it. And by sharing it with somebody, and when I did my first four step, I bracketed and read the stuff I wasn't going to read to her because there was stuff I was taking to the grave with me. And as I'm reading it, I'm thinking, this is life and death. If I don't read this, I'm going to die. And I read it to her, and she didn't cringe. She didn't kick me out of her house. She shared with me her experiences, and she loved me anyway. And so I was starting to become like a part of this fellowship, and I was able to be okay within myself and around you because I couldn't accept myself, but when somebody else did, it made it a little bit easier for me and to also let my guard down around other people. So that was just absolutely amazing. And then by doing that fourth column, I get to see what my defects are, ask God to remove, you know, become willing and ask God to remove them. And they don't get taken away like in a minute. Some of them maybe do. But I feel that there are certain defects that are going to be with me and they get removed on, you know, when they're supposed to be removed. And there are times like they're really in my face and it takes more prayer and more practicing the opposite. You know, I can't work on my defects. I could practice the opposite, but God is the one who ultimately removes them from me. You know, made my amends, you know, help others with, you know, do my prayer and meditation daily. I do 10 steps to kind of clear, to clear things up as the day goes on. If something happens, I need to ask God to remove that resentment or that selfishness or that fear or whatever it is. Talk to somebody about it and then turn my thoughts or just go help somebody. Because when I'm not, you know, when I'm not thinking of me and I'm thinking of you, that gives God an opportunity to get in there and fix what's messed up in my head. Because my mind, even after 23 years, goes back there in a minute. It's, you know, it's unbelievable. And I'm just so grateful for that. You know, Dr. Bob talked about alcohol as being the great panacea. And, you know, food for me was the great panacea. And Dr. Bob said that it also boiled down to two words, you know, love and service. And I need to be able to stay abstinent so that I could be of service to my fellow compulsive overeaters. If I'm not abstinent, if I'm not working this program, I can't help somebody the way I was helped when I came in here. I have to be able to give that back. I find that, you know, we have these 12 steps, and when I worked them out of the big book, it saved my life. But we have 36 spiritual principles. There are also 12 traditions and 12 concepts for world service. You know, our 12 steps treat the mind. It got me thinking right. And now what's a miracle is I could see a lot of times when the nonsense comes into my head, and I can see it as nonsense, and I can see it, like, for example, last week, we were going, you know, at work, we're going, I'm a teacher, we're going through park testing, it's very stressful, we've got like 300 kids and about 4 people to help us, and they're all on computers, and my supervisor was out in the hall, and everybody's frazzled, it's the beginning of testing, and I said to her, I need some help in here. She goes, well, we all need help. And we're all frustrated, and I just turned to, you know, and I'm thinking, and my first thought is, you know, it's me, but then I'm able to realize, even though, like, I feel it inside that it doesn't feel okay, I also know this is how she talks to people, number one. Number two, it's the whole testing environment is very stressful, so she was just stressed, and that's how she talks when she's stressed. That's how I talk when I'm stressed. I'm usually able to curb it pretty well at work. My family gets it from me. But so she didn't curb it as well as work at work as well as maybe sometimes I can. But I realized that it wasn't about me, but it still didn't feel good for a couple of days. So I'm able to recognize, you know, my truth and, you know, and the reality of it. I can see when the nonsense comes in. We're going to a wedding today, and they said, please, no gifts. And my husband asked me to get a card, and he said, please get a really nice card. And I said, I think we should get her something. And she said, no, I've talked to like a whole bunch of people he works with, and nobody's getting cards. And I said to him, I said, well, maybe they're just trying to make you look bad. Mm-hmm. And he just laughed at me, and he said, see, there's that thinking again. There's that, you know, compulsive overeater thinking. So I still have it, but at least today I could laugh at it, and I know that it's, you know, when my thinking is off. Like, but then I also have, you know, those are the 12 steps. It fixes my thinking. And along with that, I have the fellowship, which is where the traditions come in, where it teaches me how to play nice in the sandbox here. And I have, and if I play nice here, that teaches me how to play nice at home and at work and at other things that I'm doing. Okay. And that has helped me a lot in my world outside of here. And, you know, I've had some things happen in my personal life. About 4 years ago, something happened in the family that put a rift between my side and my husband's side of the family, like, really bad. And if it weren't for the traditions in my life, you know, outside issues, group, you know, family unity, primary purpose of our family, I don't know what would have happened. So, like, thank God for the traditions and the concepts for service. I get to freely give back what's been freely given to me, and I'm so grateful for that. And I'd like to again thank you for asking me to speak today.